In elementary school, when you saw a map of the border separating the United States and Mexico, it was probably a simple line. But in Texas, the border follows the Rio Grande. The river snakes back and forth, up and down. Many people live along its banks. Some, like Aleida Flores Garcia, for generations.
This land belonged to my great-great-great-great-grandparents. Actually, this property has been in our family for fifth generation already. To me, this has been my one and only place that I've known. I've never lived anywhere else but this little town.
The Rio Grande, like any other river, snakes. It doesn't go straight. So for the longest time, we've allowed the river to delineate where our border with the United States is. Well, it changes all the time. Over the years with erosion, the border pathway has changed. That makes the art of trying to establish an immovable border very, very difficult.
That's reporter Chris Ramirez. He's been researching the impact of the proposed border wall on South Texas. The border runs down the middle of a river. The wall would have to be somewhere on land. That means a couple of things for Texas landowners. For some, it means they could end up on the south side of the wall, cut off from their country. For others, it could mean losing their property altogether. If a wall were built on a strip of land within 500 feet of that line, and remember, the line is in the middle of a river, it would mean seizing some portion of almost 5,000 parcels of property.
Government, what are we to you? Make believe you're the ones, the owners here, see if you would like it. Feel what we are going through. Just for a day, go down to our level and feel it. They're not gonna like it.
My name is Nicole Carroll, executive editor of the Arizona Republic and azcentral.com, part of the USA Today network. Welcome to The Wall, reporting on the border. In each episode, you'll hear from journalists who've spent years reporting on the U.S.-Mexico border. You'll find out what they go through to get a story and the surprising things they learn along the way. Today, I'm talking with Chris Ramirez, a reporter for the Corpus Christi Caller-Times. He's been covering South Texas for the past 4 years. He's been working on this project for the past couple months. But in the past few weeks, a different story has taken his attention, Hurricane Harvey. I talked to him on September 5th. The community was still reeling from the storm. So Chris, before we get to your wall reporting, how are you doing? How is the newsroom?
We've been covering a lot of the devastation of Hurricane Harvey for the last couple of weeks. It came ashore about a week and a half ago, but there's still a lot of effects that we're trying to deal with. There's still people in town that do not have power. There's a lot of people that don't have homes and are still evacuated. I mean, we're trying to gather as many of those stories as we can along the way. And so far, it's been a mighty task, but we're up for it.
Newsrooms find a way to get things done. In fact, I caught up with Chris from his car, the quietest place he could find to talk. Problem was, it was also hot. So hot that at one point the call dropped because his phone overheated while he was talking on it. So Chris, the call just dropped. What happened?
Oh, well, I'm sitting in my car with the air conditioning off so I could be better heard and have better reception of me. But my phone overheated and frankly died on me, so you have to forgive me a little bit.
You are a trooper.
Hey, that's all in a day's work for a mild-mannered reporter.
Back on the line, we continue our discussion about his border reporting. Chris, reporter John Moritz, and photographer Gabe Hernandez, along with reporters Kirsten Crow and Rob O'Dell, have been researching the possible impact of a border wall on private property. Here's the main takeaway. A wall, whether it replaces the fence or simply fills the gaps, would mean thousands more property owners could be faced with handing over their land to the federal government. And even if they don't, those who live within the countless bends of the river could end up cut off on the south side of the wall. It's happened before. Under President George W. Bush, the Secure Fence Act of 2006 built most of the 700 miles of fencing currently on the border. The fence needed to go on private property, and the government filed more than 330 lawsuits against Texas property owners to get it. In most of the cases, the issue back in 2006 was not whether the government would take the land. It was about how much the government would pay the property owners. More than 200 cases were resolved, some for less than $1,000. There was one case that settled for $5 million. Some cases were wrapped up within a year or so. Most took a lot longer. Around 90 cases are still open, 9 years later. Still, a fence was built. For miles along the river, brown steel posts called bollards cut through fields and rise from river levees. But the fences come with giant gaps, too. There are fences near major border cities, but almost all of Texas remains wide open. Tony Zavaleta's family has owned land near Brownsville, Texas, since the days when it was Spanish territory.
The land that I have is my little piece of family heritage and culture that has been passed down to me. I regard that as a sacred trust. Okay, that's how important it is to me. My little ranchito is out on Palmito Hill, a very historic area because it's the site of the last battle of the Civil War.
The retired anthropology professor fears he'll have to give up his home to fill in the gaps.
If they decide that they're going to take it, it doesn't matter that it's family heritage or historic site. None of that matters to them.
Chris and Gabe drove 450 miles up the river to report this story. From Brownsville to Del Rio, he says landowners are worried.
We've talked to a lot of people who are fourth, fifth, sixth generation leaseholders of their properties. And so to carve it up or in many cases lose it is something that they're just not willing to do. One woman that we talked to said, frankly, that I don't want to be the one to lose this property to the federal government after it's been in my family for five generations. My great-great-great-grandfather built this, and I wouldn't want to dishonor his legacy by giving it away.
Other property owners might not lose their land, but they could end up on the south side of the wall.
When the border fence was created, for the most part, it followed along the path of a levee road system that runs immediately north of the Rio Grande River. There are those who believe that the border wall, if created, would replace that levee road system or run parallel to it.
If you really sit down and see the way the wall is going to be built in our little community here, we're going to be like in a prison type of a thing.
Well, there's a lot of people who have properties, homes and RV parks that are located immediately south of that levee road system. So they believe or fear that if this border wall is created, they will be walled off from the rest of the United States, even though they themselves are taxpaying American citizens. There are some people who have lived with border fencing during this time. During the 2006 border fencing creation, there's some properties that have a border fence through them that have gaps where people can literally drive through and enter a code to get through a gated system. Again, one of the big concerns is that with a seamless border wall, they may not have that luxury. There won't be any gaps.
Trump's border wall proposal, for now, remains unfunded. That doesn't ease Jeremy Barnard's anxieties. He, his father, and his uncle manage the neatly manicured 319-acre River Bend Resort and Golf Club by the Rio Grande near Brownsville.
We're a hole in the existing fencing. And so if they continued the same path that they did in 2006, that wall would continue right through here along the levee, putting 70% of our 319 acres south of the wall. So 15 of the 18 holes, over 200 of the 340 residences would all be on the south side of the wall.
As many as 12 million people live alongside the U.S.-Mexico border, according to the Migration Policy Institute. And roughly 25% of those living in the 23 U.S. counties that touch the border live at or below the poverty line. That's about twice the national average for the rest of the United States. Many welcome the wall.
Some people believe that there may be a trade-off between giving up a portion of your property in exchange for maybe getting more security. There's some people who are not convinced that a border wall will stem immigration, unlawful immigration, but they do think that it may be a deterrent to the flow of contraband coming into the United States.
Some just want more Border Patrol agents.
If there's any wish list that they have, is that instead of a border wall, some of them feel that they could use more money and application of man hours and effort toward getting better technology and actually maybe more boots on the ground.
Rancher Susan Kibbe is the executive director of the South Texans Property Owners Association. In our written story, she told reporters, quote, they don't want eminent domain to be shoved down their throats. They just want to be treated fairly. She said her organization has long demanded that the federal government move aggressively to control illegal immigration. She said farmers and ranchers are under siege from smugglers who drop off undocumented immigrants on their land, which leads to damaged fences and buildings and even lost livestock. She says the association favors, quote, the right type and amount of border fencing, for which landowners must be properly compensated. So what is the untold story of the communities closest to the proposed border wall?
I think one of the unintended consequences is that, again, some people will lose property. There are people who believe that they are the last holders of property that's been in their families for many, many years. Who knew that when they were willed this land or this property that they'd have to share the property with a federal government border fence or a federal government border wall? That was something that wasn't in the cards when their homestead or their home or their ranch land was given to them.
To start off with, I panicked because I said, oh my God, what's going on? We were not even aware of it. They just came by and they told us, you know, we need to take over your land. I said, whoa, hold on, you know, I don't want to sell my property, you know. I feel that it's mine. Why should I, you know, just sign a paper out to you and say, okay, here it is, you know, because you're the government. We are human beings. We are here, we pay our property taxes. You know, doesn't that mean anything to anybody?
Living with something like that may mean horses on one side of the fence, cows on another, or it may mean all of a sudden I don't get to see the vista or have access to the water like my great-great-grandfather did and he intended when he built this property.
You can't fight them. And there's not much I can do about it. And that's a terrible feeling because they're so powerful and their ability to do whatever it is they want to do, they're just going to take it.
I'm Nicole Carroll, and from all of us here in the newsroom and out on assignment, thanks so much for listening. This is The Wall, Reporting on the Border, a production of the USA Today Network. To read, watch, and learn more on this topic, visit thewall.usatoday.com or text our chatbot. Just send the word land to 408-USA-WALL. That's L-A-N-D to 408-872-9255. Message and data rates may apply. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find podcasts so you don't miss any part of this limited series. And if you like this podcast, please tell a friend and leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find the show. This episode was recorded, edited, and produced by Hannah Gaber, with field interviews and sound from Cheryl Evans and Gabe Hernandez. Thanks to David Wallace for additional sound editing. Kayla White was our production manager. Our technical director was Nate Kelly. It was written by John Moritz, Chris Ramirez, Tim Archuleta, and me. This podcast is part of a multimedia investigation that includes stories, short documentaries, a map and aerial footage of the entire border, and more. You can find it all at thewall.usatoday.com.